This is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. It's what we think of when we conjure up the idea of small-town New Hampshire politics, a quaint town hall with its own local governance, from the selectmen to the schools to the volunteer fire department. And up until the mid-1950s, it made sense, as most people worked, shopped, and lived their lives locally. But today, it's another story. Some say the old town and school boundaries seem out of whack with how we live now, as one researcher put it, failing to match the flow of people, energy, water, cars, wildlife, dollars, or just about anything that moves. Reflecting this newer school of thought, more Granite State towns are deciding it's not always best or economically viable anymore to go it alone. And so they're getting together, cooperating in areas from ambulance services to road salt purchases to recycling. But these marriages have their rough patches. The needs and wants of communities can differ, and big town, small town resentments and disputes can come up. Also, sharing employees can be tricky. Issues of unionization, worker contracts, hiring and firing. Today in The Exchange, reassessing regionalization. We'll look at where this trend is going, the benefits some towns are finding, and the troubles that do crop up. Let's hear from you, too. Does your town enter into agreements with neighboring communities? What do you think makes these arrangements work? What makes them fall apart, or at least get messy? Give us a call, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. We have two guests with us, Chris Porter. He's a researcher with the New Hampshire Municipal Association. Among other duties, Chris conducts regular surveys of cities and towns about regionalization. And Chris Porter, it's nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Also with us, Steve Norton, Executive Director at the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies. The center has been looking at this idea of regionalization. And Steve, thanks for making the time. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Laura.
Well, and Steve, on the face of it, this seems easy. You know, hey, let's save money by purchasing office paper or road salt or whatever together. But as you've written, there's some longstanding cultural and political resistance here when we talk about towns getting together.
Sure, absolutely. First, you know, you said it earlier in your introduction, we are a state that views ourselves as very, very local. And when the boundary of towns get in the way of conversations, it becomes apparent fairly quickly that people want to focus on their own issues, not more broadly on, say, water quality, which really crosses the town boundaries. There are also fairly significant disincentives from a state policy perspective in trying to encourage local communities to think more regionally. So both the cultural, the political, and also to some extent the history of legislation gets in the way of these types of activities.
Now, I have to ask you that. That's real interesting. So the state actually has disincentives, you think, for, you know, two adjoining towns to get together on water resources or recycling?
Well, let's take education as a good one. We have a program, the School Building Aid Program, which in some ways encourages local communities to build their own schools as opposed to regionalizing. And although there are some regionalizing incentives, in general, the policy discourages that type of regional thinking. And I think if the state is interested in helping communities move forward in this question of regionalization, they need to look at all of their policies through that light.
Well, and Chris, you've looked at this in several surveys of New Hampshire municipalities, and I've been digging into your data. It's real interesting. What about the feelings, though? What do you hear from folks when you survey municipal workers, planners, and so forth about how they feel about giving up some of that local fire department or whatever and sharing it with another town?
We've done two surveys in the last year and a half on this subject of regional sharing and cooperation among municipalities. And it came to our attention because of questions that we were fielding from municipalities that they were looking to us for guidance and for background on who's doing what with whom. And we had to admit a couple of years ago that we really didn't know for sure. So that's what prompted these couple of surveys that we did. And the one that came up in 2010, about a year and a half ago, among other things, which was a survey of the entire state, one of the questions in that study was, what do you see as the impediments to cooperating with other municipalities? And I kind of came up with a top 10 or really a top 11 list of impediments. And it's everything that you can imagine, from local control to local politics to the incompatibility of that town with my town, big town, small town issues. Geography, especially in the North Country, was an issue.
We'd love to cooperate, but it'll take us half an hour to get there.
And the bottom line, probably the 11th item on that list of top 10 or top 11 issues, was we sort of don't know where to start. We don't know where the role models are. And that's what we hoped we at the Municipal Association could provide, would be some data, some facts, some who's doing what with whom information that we could share with every other municipality in the state and say, you don't have to guess anymore about how these things may be working elsewhere. If you think about doing something, there's probably something going on somewhere that you could steal from.
Well, how much is this, Chris, about money, especially with the downshifting we've seen in recent years with the state continually cutting its budget and local governments feeling the hit?
I think that's why this has really come to the fore, that before we really didn't have to have these conversations about sharing people or stuff or resources or purchasing agreements with the town next door because it wasn't that big an issue. You know, we were all doing fairly well. But all of that's changed. It's all kind of turned upside down in the last couple of years. And I think that's why we've started to hear from so many municipalities about what can we do to save money, bottom line.
So on the face of it, Steve, you know, it sounds like, again, hey, great, let's save money, times are tight. What do you lose when you do this? It seems like it, at least economically, it's a no-brainer for towns to get together and share resources.
Well, you lose control, number one, and that's always hard for local communities. You lose some of the services tailored to your specific needs. And the real question in all of this is for local communities, the cost of giving up that control and the cost of losing the specificity of the service compared to the cost, the impact on the local property tax. I think that's really the trade-off that local communities are thinking about. If I could just add one other thing to this question about change, the other thing is we're a very different state in terms of our migration and our expansion than we were 10 or 15 years ago. When in the last 20 years, we've seen enormous growth in the state. We're not seeing that now. And so towns are not looking for expansion. In fact, some towns are looking, certainly in the North Country, but in other parts of the state, at contraction. So in addition to the state budget changes and all the troubles with the economic situation right now, there is this demographic reality that has changed, which I think is also very important in this mix.
Well, and just changes, as I said at the beginning, Steve, in terms of how we live. I mean, 30, 40, 50 years ago, a lot of people worked locally, shopped locally. Now you've got people who, you know, commute down to Boston or commute from, you know, Keene to the seacoast or whatever.
Right. And basically, there's no policy question that doesn't go beyond town boundaries now. Water quality, transportation, housing policy, all of these things now have a dimension that are well beyond the town or even a small group of towns.
So why are we still doing it this way, Chris?
Because that's how we've always done it here. I mean, that's what we learn, that's what we hear all the time, that, you know, why would we consider doing anything differently? I mean, that's the New Hampshire way. We like having 234 libraries and fire departments and police departments and everything else times 234. So how, after all these years, could we possibly consider giving up something or sharing something or relinquishing that control that we've always enjoyed?
But there's a taxpayer savings.
Absolutely.
That's in the answer as to
Absolutely.
Why we should change.
Well, hopefully. Yeah, I mean, that's really the bottom line. That's the goal.
Steve?
The question of how much this saves is really important, and I'm sure that we'll hear later on more about this, but a lot of data suggesting that there are savings, but not yet a lot of postmortems on those changes to make sure that those savings have been as large as they have been anticipated to be, which I think is another barrier to local areas making these big changes.
Our phone number here in the Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Today in the Exchange, we're looking at regionalization. Some are saying it's an idea whose time has come, but New Hampshire has a cherished tradition of local governance and local control. We're talking about municipal marriages these days, how much money they save, what makes them work well, what are some of the rough patches they go through. And let's hear from you, too. 1-800-892-6477. Do you like the idea of your community running its own affairs independently, even if it means not saving some money? Does your town have agreements with neighboring communities? Maybe it's ambulance services or you're part of a multi-town School District. What do you think makes these arrangements work? What trouble spots have you hit? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. You know, Chris, Steve Norton said earlier that one of the reasons more towns don't get together is because state law, the stuff that's on the books in Concord, discourages that regionalization, even if towns will save money. I wonder what you think about that, given your position at the New Hampshire Municipal Association.
I'm not sure that I agree. There are enabling statutes, I guess you would have to call them, in place that may not go so far as to foster or encourage these intermunicipal agreements, but they allow for any two municipalities to come together to do whatever they could do individually. So in my view, and I'm not an expert in this particular area, but in my view, from what I know, I think the statutory limitations are not there. I think Steve's perspective is a little bit different, you know, from a statewide policy perspective.
The financial incentives.
Yeah. But I think from an enabling perspective, you know, can we do this if we want to? I think those things can happen.
Let's take a call, gentlemen. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Chuck is calling from Meredith. Hi, Chuck. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning, Laura. I am the president of the Waukewan Watershed Association, a not-for-profit 501c3 organization. And where we've had successes in bringing towns together to work is we kind of cut through some of the things that might be areas of tension, get towns to work together. We've been successful in putting land into conservation to protect water quality locally. And we're continuing that now, and we're bringing in state resources as well. So I just wanted to highlight the positive role that private organizations can provide in getting this collaboration process going.
And what's your organization, Chuck?
The Waukewan Watershed Association,
okay.
Formerly known as the Waukewan Shore Owners Association.
Okay, great point. And we definitely did want to talk about the role that other groups outside of government, you know, state and local and federal, play in this. So, Chuck, we'll answer your question after a short break. Thank you for calling in. We'll take more of your calls after a very short break. We're going to check in right now with our short end-of-the-year fund drive.
I'm Bill Martell. I live in Bedford. As a frequent guest on The Exchange with Laura Canoia, I've always been taken that Laura is an absolutely superb interviewer. I think one of the very best I've ever dealt with, and I would say that in terms of her interviewing skills and the ability to run an objective, neutral, balanced, but yet inquisitive kind of talk show, really is a national asset. I don't know if the people of New Hampshire realize that, just how good she is in terms of conducting interviews on such a wide range of issues, and the level of preparation is always superb, and the climate within the on the show is always one that just encourages free inquiry, free discourse and ideas, and it really is something that I think and hope the people of New Hampshire realize just what they have.
Yes, this is a huge statewide resource, and it is here because of your support. Good morning. I'm Abby Goldstein, and I'm here with Brady Carlson during this short end-of-year drive. Your chance to support the service that's here for you every day, 1-888-805-6477, or join us online at nhpr.org.
Something that strikes me about the exchange, Abby, is the breadth of the discussions, the breadth of topics that the show covers. Here we are today talking about towns and whether a regional approach to governing might serve those towns better or not. Yesterday, the exchange, Laura and her guests talking about the presidential candidates and their stances on immigration, a national topic with international implications. That's just two shows out of the course of 1 week, and yet they're really running the gamut. Well, the exchange is able to cover so many different topics, have so many great conversations, and they're able to do that in a thoughtful way throughout the course of a whole hour because of listener support. And that's where you come in right now with your gift at 1-888 805-6477 or at nhpr.org.
And, you know, it seems easy and effortless when you listen to the radio. You know, you hear the conversation. It's just a person sitting in front of a microphone. But let me paint you a bit of a picture. In addition to Laura and her guests sitting around the microphones, there are three other people right at this very moment in the studio. Our engineer, Dan Colgan, who is manning the equipment. We have a call screener in the studio making sure the calls that are coming in are relevant and actually help advance the discussion. There is a producer in there working with Laura to help guide the questions and let her know what the callers might be calling in to talk about. And there's another producer back at the cubicle area who's working on tomorrow's show or the next day's show or the website. So there's all of this effort that goes on behind the scenes. I want you to get that mental image of all the activity behind the scenes making this conversation possible. That's what you're supporting. All of that activity is essential to make this program happen every day, and it happens with your support. 1-888-805-6477, or you can go online, nhpr.org.
So in a way, when you're making that gift to support NHPR today, it's like you're part of the team that makes the exchange possible. And when you make that gift today, you're also entered into a special drawing for the day. The prize is a $500 Apple gift card. So you could use that to pick up an iPad. You could get an iPod or an iPhone. I think the iPod shuffles now are $50. So you could pick up a whole stack of them and hand them out to people on your gift list. Or you could use it toward a new computer or pick up some software. That's up to you. But a $500 gift card for the Apple Store goes a long way this time of year. Got to make your entry by the end of the day today.
By noon.
At one, see, it's just coming up so fast. At 1-888-805-6477. Don't miss out.
And make your $100 gift, and we will send you the NHPR member card. Now, if you've donated in the past to get the member card, you may notice there is an expiration date on it. And so maybe your member card is getting ready to expire at the end of this year. Make your gift now. We'll send you the brand new member card, good for 2012. Or if you'd like, we can send the member card to somebody else. You can give the gift of a member card and have it sent to another person for the holidays. 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org. Actually, I think you have to call to get the member card sent to somebody else. The number to call, 1-888-805-6477.
Thanks so much to everyone who's made a gift to support NHPR during this end-of-year drive. If you haven't made your gift yet, now is a perfect time to do it. You just give us a call at 1-888-805-6477 or go to nhpr.org, and thanks.
Additional support for NHPR comes from PSNH, proud to partner with the Make-A-Wish Foundation, the sponsor of the Manchester Monarchs hockey team power play program. PSNH, supporting your life in every moment. And from Gilbert Interiors, the Center for Interior Design and Fine Home Furnishing, celebrating 44 years of service to Northern New England from their studio and showroom in Hanover, New Hampshire. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at regionalization in the Granite State, the benefits towns are finding from it, and some of the bumps that can come up. Let's hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. If your town has an arrangement with a neighboring community, ambulance services, a multi-town school district perhaps, what do you think makes these agreements work and work well? What trouble spots do they hit? Do you like the idea of your own town having its own affairs, its own library and fire department and police department, even if it means maybe you don't save a little bit of money? Our number, 1-800-892-6477, the email exchange at nhpr.org. Our guests are Chris Porter, researcher with the New Hampshire Municipal Association, and Steve Norton, executive director of the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies. And Steve, real quick to you, just before the break, Chuck and Meredith called. He's with a local watershed association, and he said, look, we are helping towns cooperate and get together on important issues, even when governmental entities aren't doing that.
I would say the lakes associations across the state have done a good job of creating institutions that go beyond town borders and also have been able to raise money to do something outside of the town borders. And I think one of the policy questions is, how do you create those types of cross-border institutions with authority and resources in other areas that are important, like economic development, like housing? We have regional planning commissions, but they often don't have significant resources or authority to really do much other than plan.
And you said in a recent article, Steve, that maybe We want to look at beefing these organizations up. They seem to be the natural inheritor of a desire for regionalization.
Yeah, or find another set of institutions that meet the objectives of efficient crosstown services.
Well, and I want to dig into that more with you later. But right now, we need to bring another voice into our conversation, gentlemen. Bruce Dyke is on the phone with us, chair of the Chichester Budget Advisory Committee, and also, for the purposes of our discussion, chair of the Suncook Valley Regional Town Association. This is a group of 8 towns east of Concord that share resources and ideas. And Bruce Dyke, it's really good to have you. Thanks for your time.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, you all got together to share purchasing just a few years ago, really, 2007. How did you get this ball rolling, Bruce?
This really was an outcrop of a project that was started by the town of Chichester residents who had petitioned the selectmen to form a committee to look at ways for the town to regionalize or to collaborate with area towns. We had a separate committee that spent about 6 months looking at comparative information between how we conduct our services for things like police, fire, library, highway services with our neighboring towns, which are all bigger than us, as well as with comparable towns throughout the state, you know, in terms of demographics. And as part of that, we reached out, you know, to all those towns to look at information regarding, you know, how they're doing things and trying to level set, you know, how we're conducting our operations. And as part of that, the towns that we talked to expressed an interest in getting that same data because they were curious about it as well. The end result after 6 months was a report back to our selectmen and to the townspeople about our findings. And one of the biggest issues that we came up with in terms of a recommendation was to improve the level of communication between Chichester and our surrounding towns, because it was quite obvious that no one really was talking to each other, at least at an official level.
So Chichester residents wanted you to look into this, at least, to see how other neighboring towns did what they did. And you ended up deciding, hey, let's get together. Let's not all do this. Let's share ideas and resources.
Exactly. So as a result of that survey, our selectmen approached the selectmen of 5 different towns and our neighboring towns to see if there was an interest in getting together on a regular basis and trying to collaborate on various functions. Which came together. So that was really the birth of the Suncook Valley Regional Town Association.
Well, and as I understand, you've pooled together not just for items like, you know, transfer stations, recycling, road salt, but you guys are saving money on employee health costs. That's a huge cost for local governments.
That's correct. That's probably our biggest accomplishment to date. 3 years ago, we actually worked with a local government center who really brokers most of the insurance coverage for the towns in question, and we said, hey, you know, we're all small towns, we're all part of this pool of towns that have less than 100 employees, and in the insurance world, 100 employees or more is generally where you see some substantial cost savings and break, you know, rate breaks, and they were very willing to work with us and basically got together with us and treated us all as one collective rating group, which at the time, it consisted of about 130 employees, so that got us over that 100-employee threshold. And as a result of that, we actually were able to reduce our overall health insurance costs for employees by about 15%, which is
wow,
quite significant.
That's huge, right? In this day and age, when most people's costs are going up 10 to 15% a year, to reduce it 15% is terrific. You know, Bruce, I know this has been a very positive experience for you, and the Suncook Valley Regional Town Association is often cited as a model for other areas. But you must have some sorts of tensions that come up between the towns. I mean, you guys don't always see eye to eye on everything, do you?
No, and as Chris and Steve mentioned, you know, earlier in the show, there are challenges that come up. You know, there's the issues of local control and just a general resistance to change. And I think a lot of that just comes from communication and education of the townspeople and getting them used to the idea that we don't really need to do everything on our own. You know, we don't need to have the 234 towns in this state, you know, doing their own thing in terms of fire, police, highway, and so forth. And the reality is that, you know, there are a number of collaborative agreements that exist today. Chichester, as an example, coordinates with the town of Loudoun for ambulance coverage. The towns of Barnstead, Chichester, Epsom, and Pittsfield for years have had a cooperative agreement with regard to solid waste recycling and transfer station operations, which all work very well.
You know, Bruce, last question for you, if I could. What kind of advice would you give other regions interested in doing this in terms of what makes your association work and, you know, pitfalls that they could avoid if they were to jump into what you guys are doing in Suncook Valley?
again, I think this was touched on earlier, but you know, the first item would be finding compatible towns. You need to make sure that you have, you know, comparable towns in terms of demographics and geography to make this work, I believe.
And size too, right?
Exactly. And making sure that your boards of selectmen and department heads are on board with it, you know, are open to the idea of at least having the discussion, and setting realistic expectations. You know, this isn't about going in and saying, hey, we're going to coordinate and consolidate police departments and fire departments from the get-go. There's a lot of little things that can be done, and as a good way to get started, get people used to the idea, establish that communication between the various groups, and then, you know, perhaps down the road there are opportunities for some of those bigger items to be addressed.
Interesting. So you don't have to jump in whole hog.
Exactly.
It's been good to talk to you. Thank you, Bruce.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Again, that's Bruce Dyke, chair of the Chichester Budget Advisory Committee and chair of the Suncook Valley Regional Town Association. Our number for you to join us as we look at the regionalization trend here in the Granite State is 1-800-892-6477. Chris Porter, Steve Norton, quick thoughts about what we heard from Bruce Dyke, Chris, before we go to our callers.
That Suncook Valley group has been a really great role model, I think, for others. Just in the survey that we did a couple of months ago, we learned about a new group also in this part of the state. I've labeled it the Swab Towns. It's Salisbury, Webster, Andover, and Boscawen that have come together. They've met with us at the Municipal Association just to talk about, you know, how we get things going. But they've already done some of the kind of low-hanging fruit purchasing agreements. They've got a couple of agreements with the school district going on. So they're already making things happen, but they're very much looking toward Bruce's Suncook Valley Group as a role model. So I think these things just kind of bubble up organically, and always happy to see these things going on.
Well, I like what he said about, you know, you don't have to jump in all right away. I mean,
right.
It's, as I understand, police and fire are especially tricky to
They learn. Are tricky, yeah. I mean, that's probably the last thing that's going to fall. I know of only one pair of towns that has truly merged its police departments.
Now,
for
why
instance
is that?
There are a lot of issues there related to personnel. I mean, do we have two police chiefs? If not, which one goes away? That could be a stumbling block right there. I mean, that could just stop the whole conversation before you get anywhere else. Who's the employing town?
Who's the boss?
Who's the boss? Who's in charge? How do we share people and equipment? And if we get to that magic number of 10 employees, then we have union issues that may bubble up that haven't before in a relatively small town.
So a small town with 5 police officers, no problem. But once you get to 11, 12, 13, 14, you may have to unionize.
Exactly.
Steve?
In a strange way, this conversation is very similar to the one that Europe is going through now with respect to the euro and what's happening in Europe. You know, these same questions about who has control, who has the authority, are threatening something that, you know, has been there for 10 years. So there's something structural in that type of consolidation that is difficult.
Okay, and that's an analogy I had not thought of, but you're right. It's kind of the rich town, poor town, Greece versus Germany and so forth. Well, it was great to hear from Bruce, and you're right that Suncook Valley Regional Town Association has been cited often as a model. Let's go back to our phones, gentlemen. And John is calling from Pittsfield. Hi, John, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hello. I'm calling to Chris knows of this. We have a thing in Pittsfield called BCEP, which is the facility for waste management for Pittsfield, Barnstead, Epsom, and what am I missing?
Chichester.
Hello, Chris.
Hi, John.
But anyway, that thing has been, I've been here 25 years. And I believe it was here when I came.
So it's been going on for a long time, John.
Yeah, it works marvelously, and it seems that is a model that has, you know, not real problems. You've got this central facility. People come in there from the various towns, from the 4 towns, and put their garbage. It's a very well-run place. I compliment us. You know, the 4 towns, every time I go there.
Well, John, it's good to hear from you. And, you know, it's funny, Steve, we have this image of the town dump, but he's right. It's more often than not, it's the regional dump.
Right. And what this is making me realize, the work that we did in our What is New Hampshire work around regionalism, we got lots of responses bubbling up about things that were happening. And it's clear that the The LGC has done a great service by collecting information, and these things are going to bubble up more and more and provide information to others that are trying to do this.
Thanks for that call, John. The number 1-800-892-6477. The email exchange at nhpr.org. Here's an email from Robert and Epsom gentleman. It says, the school budgets are larger than the town budgets, and the most regional cooperation so far has been with multi-town school districts. How's that been working out as a model for other expanded districts? I wonder what both of you think about that. Chris, do you want to go?
Well, it's a little tricky because at the Municipal Association, we don't follow school things that closely.
Because there are other groups working
on school issues.
Obviously,
it's all interrelated.
But I wonder if that provides a model, because the person who emails Robert is right. Schools have been doing this for a long time. Is there a model for municipal governments here?
Certainly, it falls into the same category of why do we need so many unique SAUs around the state. And it always kind of pains me personally when I see these things fall apart when, I forget what it was, Alton and Barnstead and Pittsfield, I think, were together at one point, and Pittsfield split off. And it seems to happen more that they're disintegrating rather than coming together to create larger SAUs. So it's a little bit disheartening in that regard. So I wouldn't necessarily point municipalities to the SAU model as a great one to follow.
Well, we did a program.
Because I think they're going the wrong way.
A couple of years ago, we did a program. There were a number of what we called school divorces going on.
Right.
These SAUs, school administrative units that had gotten together and then did break up. That's
exactly.
Interesting what you say, Steve.
Just say that the demographics are going to work against the breakups soon enough. We're seeing a decline in the number of children. Communities are going to be forced to look at this question in a much greater way. Our period of great expansion as a state occurred in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and now migration has largely stalled. So I think we're up for another set of pressured conversations about consolidation.
That's interesting. So as our demographics change, these conversations are going to change yet again, Steve.
That's correct.
Did you want to jump in there, Chris?
No,
quick?
I think that's a perfect point.
I hope
it's true.
Our phone number again on the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Robert, thanks for that email. The email address is exchange@nhpr.org. Gentlemen, when we come back from a short break, we'll take more calls, but also want to ask you a little bit about what they're doing in Maine. They are really going all out on this regionalization trend over in the Pine Tree State. So I'll ask you about that. And we will take more of your calls, so stay on the line, and we'll be right back.
Oh, gosh. The Exchange, of course, is my absolute favorite. I think Laura does such an extraordinary job on both local and national issues. Everyone loves Car Talk. I listen to Prairie Home Companion. I love Diane Rhee. I enjoy Talk of the Nation. And, of course, it would not be morning without Morning Edition, and it would not be the evening without All Things Considered. This is Bishop Gene Robinson. I'm the ninth bishop of the Diocese of New Hampshire.
And you can join the bishop in supporting New Hampshire Public Radio, which brings you programs that you can genuinely love. Hi, I'm Brady Carlson here with Abby Goldstein. This is NHBR Short End of Year Drive. We'll be back to the exchange in just a few minutes. But right now, we'd like to ask for your help in supporting NHBR at 1-888-805-6477 or at nhpr.org. And you want to make your gift this morning because we have a special drawing. The winner gets a $500 Apple gift card. That drawing ends at noon today, so you don't want to wait any longer. Make your gift right now.
1-888-805-6477. Or you can make that gift online at nhpr.org. One of the things that I think is really unique and wonderful about the exchange is that you can have a conversation about the New Hampshire traditions that we cherish here in the Granite State. But you can also have a conversation about change. And, the exchange really does a good job of keeping its finger on the pulse of changes. Like today's conversation about shared municipal services, a conversation that's been going on in the state for a number of years as towns are looking to work within their budgetary constrictions. The exchange does a really good job of following proposals and keeping their eye on trends and being able to present these conversations as changes are afoot and giving you the chance to add your voice to the discussion. Because after all, Who are these changes going to affect? You. 1-888-805-6477 is the number to call right now to support the exchange or make your gift online, nhpr.org.
So that we can have more of these kinds of conversations, we hope you'll put a little change into New Hampshire Public Radio today, because that's really how it works. Your contributions pay for the programs you listen to every day. They pay for the reporters who cover the news here in New Hampshire, the ones who cover the national scene from NPR in Washington, the folks who cover the international stories from Egypt to Eurozone and so much more. It pays for the recording equipment that our reporters use, the transmitters, and the fees that go with them. All that it takes to run a radio station is what you're supporting with your donation right now at nhpr.org or at 1-888-805-6477.
That $100 donation will get you the new NHPR member card. Maybe your member card is reaching its expiration date right now. Make that call now and get your new member card for 2012. And make sure you get your name entered into our drawing today, because your gift right now today by noon will get you entered to win that $500 Apple gift card. So make sure that you get your call in now. Make your donation now so that when 11:55 rolls around, you're not frantically trying to get your call in so you can get in the running to win that $500 Apple gift card. We do have winners. People win these things, and this could be you. So make that call, 1-888-805-6477.
It's a great prize that you don't want to miss out on a chance to win. And think about this, too. We talked a moment ago about how the exchange covers issues that affect us all here in New Hampshire. Well, in that same way, when you're making a gift to New Hampshire Public Radio, you're doing something for yourself, but you're also making an impact on people just like you who listen to New Hampshire Public Radio, some of which who really can't afford this year to make a gift to support their own listening. You're making that service available to everyone here in the Granite State, which is something special. So that $100 contribution, that $200 contribution goes to help the whole state at 1-888-805-6477.
And looking back over the course of this past year, just in recent months, we did a week-long series on New Hampshire's immigration story. This is our year-long editorial initiative around immigration, and just a really interesting week of conversations. Over the course of this past year, the Exchange celebrated 15 years on the air. And as part of that celebration, they had a series called the Exchange Yearbook. Each episode of the Exchange looked back at 1 year of our life in New Hampshire since the Exchange has been on the air. Looking ahead, there's so much to cover. There'll be more discussions around immigration and, of course, coverage of the election. Make that call right now and pay it forward on the Exchange. 1-888-805-6477.
Additional support for NHPR comes from Lars Heating Systems, manufacturing boilers and water heaters for homes and commercial buildings for over 60 years. Built in New Hampshire with pride. Information at laars.com. And New Hampshire Magazine this month featuring 21 tips for surviving winter and ideas on how to have a stress-free holiday. New Hampshire Magazine, where New Hampshire comes to you. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Monday in The Exchange, Mark Huddleston, president of UNH, joins us. Email us your questions for President Huddleston before the program, if you'd like. exchange@nhpr.org is the address. And join us Monday morning, live at 9. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at the economics and politics behind a growing regionalization trend in New Hampshire as towns get together to share resources and even personnel. Join us 1-800-892-6477 or email exchange@nhpr.org. And Chris Porter, Steve Norton, before we go back to our callers, I wanted to ask you guys what you think about what's happening in Maine. They're talking a lot about this. They just started a whole regionalization program. Cash incentives, gentlemen, for localities that agree to curb local tax rates through shared services. One Maine researcher said the way his state is going, it's collaborate or collapse. What do you think, Chris Porter? Can you imagine New Hampshire doing this?
If it's coming from the top down, if it's coming from the state down, I suspect there's going to be a lot of pushback on that from municipalities, just because that's not how these things tend to work organically. I mean, if you think about the Suncook Valley Group and all of these other municipal arrangements that I've learned about over the last couple of years, they tend to come absolutely from the grassroots. So it's almost the opposite model here. It sounds great, but if it involves the state and involves the state spending any money to promote this kind of thing, I can't imagine that it would absolutely that it would even work here or be well embraced anyway.
Steve, what do you think?
In a strange way, I think there is a real opportunity. I think Chris is absolutely right that there's some cultural barriers to this, but the state distributes a lot of resources to local communities, and I think we're not yet out of the budget conversation. And I think you could certainly see a path to the state saying, we might give more money to a community that is trying to save 5% for the next 10 years. And but I think I have to agree that it's going to that would be a tough row to hoe.
Well, it's almost like an arranged marriage where, you know, you don't necessarily get along. Whereas the Suncook Valley group we heard about, these are people that really wanted to get together and
That's right.
Some commonality.
Yep.
But they're going for it in Maine. I mean, Governor Baldacci says, and this isn't law yet, but he favors a municipal service district. This is where towns would be encouraged to gather into groups and would be given a big carrot for making the leap. The state would, get this, the state would assume their town and district debt and give them a 10% bonus in school aid. If you didn't regionalize, you get a 10% cut in your school aid. Now, this is just an idea, but wow, Chris, huh?
Yeah, that's a wow. I just can't see it happening here. I mean, the way things have gone with the budget in the last year, it's almost unimaginable.
Well, and in some of the, you talked about the personality conflicts of different towns. And again, do you really want to push people together?
That's just it. And I think Steve may be speaking to the Regional Planning Commission aspect here. There have been some attempts at the regional planning level to make these things happen. But again, I think the model was upside down because it was kind of a top-down dictate. And the participating, potentially participating municipalities just kind of looked at it and said, it wasn't our idea, so I don't think we're going to play in that sandbox.
Can you talk about that, the regional planning associations and the role that they play in this regionalization trend and the role that they could play, Steve?
Right. Well, I think the ultimately what's going to drive the conversation is the economics. When you look at the amount of capital investment that's going to be required to ensure quality water in New Hampshire, that's going to force people to think differently about the problem. So whether the Regional Planning Commission is engaged in that or nonprofits or even for-profit organizations that are, you know, fundamentally dependent on good quality water, things are going to happen. And it's unclear that regional planning commissions can, because they haven't been able to up to this point, be really an effective force for regionalization.
Let's take another call. This is Ray in Madison. Hi, Ray. You're on the air. Welcome. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, Laura. Thank you for taking my call. I'm on a withdrawal study committee in the town of Madison that is studying the withdrawal of our town from SAU 13 to join SAU 9. And we had formerly the three towns in SAU 13 separated from SAU 9 in the wave of separation as one of your guests referred to earlier in the 90s, and we wanted for autonomy, more service, and so on and so forth. And but I think we've found that there was a little bit of sacrificing for economies of scale too, and it is more expensive to do it this way. So while there are good reasons to be small, there are good reasons to be big, and there are bad reasons for both of them too. So we're going to go forward with a vote on that in March.
So hang on, just catch me up here, Ray. So your town, Madison, was in a big group, a big SAU, and decided to withdraw from that group and form your own or go to a smaller one? What happened there?
Well, in the 90s, we three of the towns in SAU 9 decided to break away and form their own SAU and went through a lot of legal things, and then we finally did, and it's SAU 13.
I see.
But this is a multi-town, a 10-town, it was a 10-town organization in the 90s. Transportation for the superintendent to go to every single meeting, it was nightmarish for them. But since then, things have changed. But the geography of it all up here, there aren't as many people, and there are way more area to cover. So Tamworth, Madison, and Freedom in the south, Bartlett and Jackson in the north, and Conway in between is quite an area to spread out. And each one of them has their own school board. So the superintendent has a lot of school. school board service type things to do.
Wow. So how do you think it's going to end up in your area, Ray?
Well, it'll be a tough one. I think one of the things that are blocking us is the way the law is written. It's hard to move like that. And maybe it should be a little bit hard to move. But one of us recently, in the last couple of days, a citizen came up with an idea about asking legislators to do a special law for our area just to reunite the whole thing. Well, I'm not sure Tamworth and Freedom would be on board with that, but maybe conversations could be started anyway. But it's just very ponderous. We've had 10 meetings, and all we could do is decide to leave one and go to another.
Oh, boy.
We have to leave everybody else behind. They would have not much resources to fund things. It would change the nature of theirs quite a bit.
Well, Ray, thank you very much for calling in. Boy, real interesting gentleman. Any thoughts there? I know you said earlier, Chris, you folks don't really deal with school issues. So.
True. I mean, we bump into them just by natural means, but we don't specifically deal with schools or school districts, but are clearly aware of these conversations and breakups and marriages and so forth, and I think have often said, at least to ourselves, that this is probably not a good role model for municipalities.
Well, and one of the issues that comes up for municipalities when they try to get together is what our caller Ray talked about. Just geography is a challenge, mm-hmm. especially in the North Country. Boy.
Absolutely.
And you imagine that superintendent just spending all his or her time in the car.
That's right. It is an issue. I mean, sometimes just distance between towns will cause these things to never get off the ground, even though it seems like a good idea because we are small and we really shouldn't have to do this all ourselves. Why don't we pair up with somebody? But then geography and town differences just get in the way.
Steve?
These things move glacially. But I would say the momentum is increasing towards consolidation. And I found it interesting that Ray talked about legislation that would be necessary to help join these folks. And I think, back to a point I made earlier, if the state is interested in helping municipalities and others and school districts provide the most cost-effective services, they need to look at their own legislation to make sure that it's encouraging that. And I don't know what piece of legislation Ray was talking about, but certainly that might be an example.
All right, Ray, good to hear from you. Let's take one more. In Kittery, Maine, John is calling. Hi, John. We were just talking about Maine. You probably heard us.
I certainly did. And I don't want to pull the show off topic and too far into school stuff, but Baldacci is our previous governor, and currently we have LePage.
I'm sorry. I misspoke there. Absolutely. Oh. Maine's former governor, Baldacci. Yes.
And the political will behind the consolidation seems to have dried up, and that the success rate of getting schools to consolidate, I think, was pretty low. I think the legislation sought to consolidate a great many schools, but I think at the end of it, they were mostly unsuccessful. I know that our local school here in Kittery was talking to two other larger high schools about consolidating, but the local will against it was strong, and the incentives were against it for the larger districts to absorb our smaller school.
And, John, I'm so sorry. I got to cut you off in the interest of time. Steve Norton, quick thoughts from you. Thanks, John, for calling in.
This began in Maine in 2003 with a series of pieces of legislation, and there have been ebbs and flows in this across the northern New England states and the country. I don't think the energy behind this is going to end. I just think the demographics and the economics are going to demand it.
Okay. And one last question for you, gentlemen. Again, as we look at regionalization, we've talked about other models, other groups. What about, Chris Porter, the counties? We have counties in New Hampshire. Why don't they take the lead on this?
A few have. A couple have, or at least one has that I know of. Stratford County is doing some very interesting things with its constituent municipalities, if you will, which includes Dover, Rochester, Somersworth as cities, and Durham and others as towns. They are already providing dispatch services and some prosecutorial services, but just recently they have proposed providing all prosecutorial services for all of the county's municipalities.
And it's a big leap.
It's a big leap. A big leap, especially for the cities who already feel fairly comfortable in their own skin.
Well, and a whole different tale over there in that area. We'll have to follow up at a later date. Yeah. Steve, super short?
corrections, nursing homes, counties are already responsible for them. That's a big source of expenditures, and taking on more by counties is tough. Administratively, it requires investments, and so absolutely there's opportunities there, but it presents its own set of challenges.
All right, gentlemen, great to talk to you. Thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure.
This is The Exchange on NHPR.
And, of course, the conversation continues on the sharing of municipal services online at nhpr.org. Good morning. I'm Abby Goldstein. I'm here with Brady Carlson. It is our short end-of-year drive. The Diane Rehm Show comes your way in just about 4 minutes. And, of course, it is the news roundup. Right now, it's your chance to support New Hampshire Public Radio. Get in on our drawing for today. A little over 2 hours left to get your name in to win a $500 Apple gift card. The number to call is 1-888-805-6477, or make your gift at nhpr.org.
I always look forward to the Friday news roundup, not just because it happens to be on a Friday, but because I know that in the course of 2 hours, Diane and her guests are going to run through so many stories that I really am going to learn something from. I'm going to find out, of course, in the first hour about issues here in the United States, maybe the presidential campaigns, maybe what's happening in the U.S. economy. And then in the international scene, we'll find out more about what's happening in Egypt or Syria. We'll find out what the European countries have been talking about at their summit this week, and so much more. And then your calls and emails become part of the conversation, too. That's just 2 hours of the Diane Rehm Show, and it's there for you every weekday. So why not support it with a gift to NHPR at 1-888-805-6477.
And as the end of the tax year swiftly approaches, just a few weeks away, consider adding New Hampshire Public Radio to your menu of charitable donations. We've got a full range of giving options. You can do a stock transfer. You can do an IRA rollover. You can donate a vehicle. There are planned giving options, and you'll be supporting statewide organization that provides